Welcome to the Brampton Talks podcast. My name is Nikita, and I'm joined here today with Sushil and Sylvia. You might know Sylvia from Twitter as Brampton's Recorder. Welcome to the show. Today on the show, we're talking about the Riverwalk Project, hosting public consultations on religious and cultural days, and zoning bylaws.
All right, so first topic is Riverwalk, and I know Sylvia has a lot to say about this, especially considering as of late, we're probably not going to get a lot of the funding we were hoping for from the province, so Sylvia, take the lead.
Yeah, so hi, my name is Sylvia. You might know me as Brampton's Recorder on Twitter. I show up at a lot of city events, and so I was there at the EA. I found out through Reddit for someone posting a link to Paul Vicente's Facebook post, which is outstanding communication work by the city.
Already started, even though, you know, he's not even a city council yet. It's a good example.
So what you're saying is there's like multiple steps. So it's like the city said that there was a public consultation for the EA, and then you had to go through Paul Vicente's Facebook page, mm-hmm. which was posted to Reddit.
Yes.
So that's like how many layers of getting to this information?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So that's a different story. So the official name for Riverwalk, or at least the core of it, is the Downtown Brampton Flood Protection EA for the environmental assessment. So the presentation was showing on the different aspects. So what Riverwalk is, at the core of it, it's just a flood control project. You've probably seen the ridiculous amount of construction going on downtown. Wesley Jackson, who was a mayoral who ran for the office of mayor, kept pointing out, like, you know, we've spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars on downtown. What are we going to do with this money? So the problem is for downtown, the province has decided because of flood risks, you can't build down there for very much. There were special protection areas that were set up to allow a little bit because the current setup is basically judged against a scale. So what they use as reference is Hurricane Hazel. So for some of you who know a little bit about the whole culverts and stuff downtown, that was there before Hurricane Hazel. So you're like, wait, why is this a problem if you're judging against Hurricane Hazel? But it was there for Hurricane Hazel, and Brampton didn't flood, unlike in Toronto, where an entire street basically got washed away.
So, I mean, are we just over-regulating here with respect to flooding, or is there like an actual concern?
How it actually works is it's against Hurricane Hazel on the Etobicoke Creek floodplain, and so ours is only good against a 1 in 350 chance. So some places will call it a 350 year flood, but what it means is a 1 in 350 chance per year, which is different. You can get back-to-back 100-year floods. In fact, some places in the U.S. have found that you can get back-to-back 500-year floods and then another one to kick you when you're down.
I'm sure a lot of people have seen those images floating around of the last flood in downtown Brampton quite a few decades ago, but for the layperson who might not fully understand, like, downtown Brampton's in a floodplain. It could flood at any time. And we've seen even in past years and summers when we've had heavy amounts of rain, it's flooded, not to, you know, the degree that it's flooded years ago, but it happens.
So, I mean, for people that don't play City Skylines, I mean, like, what does the city need to do to ensure that we don't, you know, we significantly lower that chance of flooding?
Okay, so there's two components. There's an upstream and then a downstream portion. So a little bit of the study. So the city has contracted a third party. I don't remember the party's name. But then they were also, so they're hosting it to create a sort of a neutral thing. So it's not the city or the TRCA biasing it. There was also someone from the TRCA. And then
what is
also,
the TRCA?
So the TRCA, the acronym stands for, is currently escaping me, but they deal
Toronto with Region Conservation Authority.
Excellent. There we go. Thank you. So they deal
here
with
to provide, like, the facts.
Just wanted everybody to know. I think we're a bit wonkish.
The average layperson, it's totally normal if you have no idea what that is.
They handle a lot of the regional parks you see in Brampton, Hartley Conservation Area, and other conservation areas. Those are the folks who take care of those. So, you know, that's kind of a point of reference, figure who they are. But the Riverwalk Project is not only supposed to divert floods from downtown Brampton, but it's also supposed to be really nice looking, as from what I understand, right?
So the making it look nice is what we call Riverwalk, and was really what Mayor Jeffrey wanted. And this project is just about dealing with the water, because we have to figure out how to deal with a ton of water. So after the questions, one person's like, but why don't we build this big dam? Why don't we build? There's like a whole bunch of space north of the creek thing, right?
No, is that like Rosalie Park they're referring to?
No, or? We're talking about like near Beauvert.
Oh, and so even farther.
They're like, yeah, so if we did that, we have to figure out how to create something that will hold a whole bunch of sky domes worth of water. So what has it been called now? I think it's the
Rogers Center?
Yeah. Wait, didn't they change it for something else?
That was Scotiabank.
Was a different thing. It's fun with all of these things changing around. But yeah, so it's like a whole bunch of sky domes worth. So they're going to be holding public consultation over the next 20 months because, you know, you got to have all of your public consultation. The city's been really good. So one guy showed up to it and he's like, hi, so I noticed on these projects, my house doesn't exist in some of these alternatives. Why did no one tell me? And they were like, we thought we put it out.
Oh, by the way, FYI, your house is about to disappear.
Well, so it would be
I forgot to tell you.
It would be a case of the city would buy it, and if they weren't willing to sell, they'd go through the expropriation process because they need it. So there's an upstream.
That, I feel like, is something you should tell people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of concerning. It's so there's a couple different things going on here.
One of the most exciting things I think about this is that people have waited a long, long time to be able to redevelop downtown Brampton. And from what I understand, a lot of the barriers behind that is the flood diversion, right?
Yeah, so it's because of the special policy areas that the province has put in. Because, you know, there's 1 in 350 chance of it flooding per year. There's limits on how much density can be developed in certain portions. I think there's 4 different portions, A, B, C, and D, with them not being contiguous. So D has 2 separate sections because that's clearly the way to lay it out. So it's over a 20-month process. We're currently doing some basic public consultations. It's going to be followed up within fall of this year and winter, through winter of next year. There's going to be looking at alternative solutions. After that, there's going to be a public consultation. Then for spring/summer of 2019, design concepts for preferred solutions, a couple more consultations, and an environmental study report due in fall 2019 to winter 2020. And then in the summer of 2020, then they anticipate the approval. Yeah. So this is a long process.
This is a long haul project, but I think that it's going back to the downtown. It's so integral for downtown to be able to redevelop, right? We have a few condo buildings. The density is low down here. And that's been a big complaint on a number of fronts, right? We know the businesses, it's hard for them to get foot traffic outside of sort of the 9 to 5 when city workers are here. It's challenging to find places to live down here. And it's frankly, one of the most convenient places you could live because it's right along the GO line. It's right by the Zoom and everything. But there's just not a lot of housing options. So I think that this could really open the doors for Brampton, because I can imagine developers want to build by a GO line, want to build by the Zoom in this area, but can't, from what I can imagine.
Yeah, so the issue is the floodplain. This requires a little bit of a history lesson about Brampton. So we have Highway 10, what we call Main Street in Hurrah, Ontario. This is a very long road. So you have right there, and then you also had the Etobicoke Creek, which served as a source of water. So it made sense to develop there. So it's a crossroads, so you have travel, but then you also have fresh water access, which is very important for farming and any kind of water mill set up for grinding up wheat, because we used to grow wheat, believe it or not. And there's a whole bunch of attached stuff. But because it grew up around that, so if you actually look at some of the photos, the older buildings, they actually have special doors at the back that open in the creek. So let me put it this way. The flooding is so frequent, they put in doors in the back that opened on the creek to let the flood water out.
And from what I understand, that's still a requirement for buildings that are built now, isn't it? Like, if you look at the building on George Street and some of the others that are built, they've got, like, they have to have that. Isn't that a requirement?
Well, now they're putting it on, like, a raised pond. But this was, like, old school. There's just a door so that they can drain the water.
And so even when you look at the George Street building, it's got, like, that weird platform that the building sits on. And I can imagine that that's not cheap for developers to build. So they often overlook downtown Brampton because there are so many hoops to jump through. It's just not worth it for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this actually involves a topic I really don't like talking about because everyone loves to kill each other about it. It's the LRT. So part of the reason why some people didn't want the LRT down there is because it's in a floodplain. I don't know if you saw photos, but not so long ago, Toronto had major flooding, which put a whole bunch of their streetcars out of commission because flooding and they were basically stuck.
Yeah.
Because that's how rails work. You're, well, on rails.
True, but I mean, we have to consider that it was the Ontario government that was willing to take that risk.
I know, but that was one of the objections to it for how the water is set up. So there's an upstream and a downstream portion. So upstream is north because it's going downstream, or I guess because of how we consider it. It's all sorts of weird for actual, but think about north from how you think about north.
Got it.
Our grid's at this weird angle with the lake is south, even though the lake is southeast. So there's three options. Blocking the water from spilling out with some kind of berm stuff on the north end. So if Nikita, maybe you'll want to put some photos up. The RTRCA will be having some photos and all the slides and stuff up. So the options are a berm that could be moving Ken Willans Drive to create more space in the valley. So when there's lots of water, it gives it more space to expand to. So that's one way to deal with it. The third one is deepen and widen the channel.
Got it.
Which is
the
more
existing channel.
Yes, that's the existing channel. Which
you can see, by the way, people. It's there. Like if you're walking behind the Dairy Queen, you'll see part of it. Or if you're walking in Rosalie Park in downtown.
It's a beautiful looking concrete ditch.
Yeah. A ton of graffiti. It's real inviting.
Yeah, so the problem with that is there's a sewer line that runs next to it and under it and then next to it and then under it and then next to it and then under it, which is going to be a bit on the complicated side.
So what you're saying, so basically, I mean, to sum things up, the Riverwalk is a very complex project.
It's going to be expensive too.
My next question is, how much is this going to cost? Because we've had discussions on this podcast at length about what is coming down the pipeline for Brampton and who's going to pay for it.
We never had this much detail about the project and why it's necessary.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I think we can establish that this is a very necessary project. That downtown Brampton has been waiting for a long time to just fix these flood issues. It would solve some issues with the development in downtown Brampton, which is much needed. But also, the Riverwalk would be really pretty. And the one we have right now is kind of ugly. So it would definitely be a draw. Like I've heard, you know, talks of building little cafes and things similar to what Austin, I guess, Texas has done. So that could be really cool. But the question is, how much dough do we have to spend to make this happen? Yeah.
If you're looking for your basics to lots of concrete version, you're looking at minimum $300 million. And it goes up from there if you want it to look pretty.
Okay, so we're talking at the price of an LRT. I think we knew this, though.
That is the cost of getting the LRT from
Shoppers
World to downtown,
or the
cost of a BRT line from downtown to Vaughan.
Okay, so it's expensive. The question is, where will the money come from? The feds kicked in the money to do the environmental assessment studies. So I guess we'll be looking to them to find
it. So someone asked them to the feds about, can you kick in some money on the university? And the feds are coming. It's like, well, we put in money for the flood EA for Riverwalk. So I don't know. So you got a couple issues here. So
I think the challenge with the feds is that, especially in Brampton, they don't want to take on anything that the province has dumped. That sets a really bad precedent. But the fact that they've already kicked in money for this, obviously our federal representatives in Brampton know that this is a priority. But also, I think it's reasonable enough to expect that they might potentially want to fund this.
Yeah, so with the TRCA thing, it's really a provincial issue because of how that's set up.
Oh, well, in that case, bye.
Yeah.
See you never, Riverwalk.
So the city's they haven't really talked about it. There's a couple ways you could. So the city has sort of been running a substantial surplus For a number of years. So when I say sort of, here's the thing. So you have your structural surplus, what you're taking in every year, and what you're spending every year. So that's like your structural, whether you're having a surplus or having a deficit. So in Ontario, city is required to legally, at least on a cash accounting basis, which we could talk about in a separate podcast, but that's a long story for it. So basically, cities cannot run a deficit. And well, you can't, but you have to have hard cash reserves sitting aside, and then you can dip into it. So there's no taking on debt for operational stuff.
So what you're saying? So I guess
my question would be, does the city have the money? So because if we look at the funding model, most cities fund their things by, you know, they pay 33%, the province pays 33%, the feds pay 33%. So Brampton would be looking, let's say at minimum we're spending $300 million, like you said, we're looking at minimum $100 million.
Yeah, so that's...
Do we have that kind of cheddar?
Yes, actually. So when I was talking about the structural thing, for large capital projects like the Riverwalk are separate. So the reason I'm saying we sort of have a surplus is that surplus was from developer charges. These are one-time payments to the city. And so they don't represent your structurally setting money aside. Mm-hmm. It's a one-time transfer. And this has to last mm-hmm. you. They give it for that project. And that's it from that project. Everything else has to come from property tax. So we do have the reserve set aside. The city doesn't want to dig into it.
Yeah.
And we're people are going to say Brampton's not getting its fair share, but the reality is the province says it's got a $15 billion deficit. You can talk about whether that's a realistic number or not, but to the province, they're thinking about that number when they're talking about funding in mind. They're not funding it.
Okay.
And so we have them for at least another 3 years. But then for the federal government, the election is next year in October. So if they make any promises, it's going to be at least in the budget after the election.
Okay. So I guess, you know, Brampton has this dream of a Riverwalk, a really pretty one. We don't want just the basic $300 million Riverwalk. I think we're going to want something bigger than that. But we'll have to stay tuned to see if the funding kicks in to make this thing happen. Should the city of Brampton host public consultations on major cultural and religious events? Well, they recently did.
Yeah, so you know that Riverwalk EA thing we were talking about? Yeah, they held that on Diwali. I realized that in the evening when I heard the fireworks. I'm like, do they have a permit for that? Aren't fireworks banned? Wait, no, Diwali is one of four events in the city that you can get fireworks exemptions for. And those are Victoria Day, Canada Day, New Year's, and Diwali. So there's only four events for this.
So what you're saying is like the city. So what you're saying is the city does not have a calendar that keeps track of this for public consultations. Because I mean, a third of the city celebrates or at least observes Diwali, right? So what you're doing is you're exempting a third of the city from public consultations.
For sure.
And that doesn't seem fair.
Okay, but can we talk about how difficult it is in general to engage in the city? Like, realistically speaking, unless you're a person who's retired or maybe doesn't work, it's super hard to engage. The council meetings and major meetings are during the day. They start at 9 a.m. on a Wednesday.
9:30.
So in general, it's not very hard or it's not very easy to engage in city politics.
And I would say another huge problem with this is just, as Sylvia mentioned earlier, she got the information from Reddit, right? And then from Reddit, she had to go to Paul Vicente's Facebook page. And then she had to go, you know, to the city's website.
So, no, actually, it was just a Paul Vicente's Facebook page.
So that's even worse, right?
So that's the thing. The city's website is extremely cumbersome and difficult to use.
Yeah.
Even looking up for agendas and things like that, it's really hard to find. The city does print public consultation notices in the Brampton Guardian, but like, I don't know about you guys, but mine hasn't come in months to my house.
I haven't received the Brampton Guardian
thankfully, because it doesn't
either.
Usually get into my house anyway, yeah. But waste of paper. No offense. We can all just read it digitally, but they do print the consultations. I just don't know how accessible the information is. So I feel like there's already so many barriers. For one thing, it's hard to engage because most meetings happen during the day. For two, if you want to engage, let's say, it's so hard to find information about it. But then for them to host an event or on such an important topic, like this Riverwalk project could be game-changing for Brampton on a day where most people are doing something that's culturally and religiously significant for them. That just doesn't make any sense to me. I feel like the city should have better, you know, foresight than that.
I feel like this speaks into a larger problem, right? And the problem is one of user experience, right? We don't regard our citizens or the people that live in Brampton as users of these online services, right? And as a result, without that lens guiding a lot of decision making with relation to our digital properties, we're going to end up in this situation over and over and over again, where you have to find, you know, information regarding public consultations from like the least accessible way to get there. And I mean, right now, for example, if you want to get involved or give a deputation to city council, as mentioned, you know, just right now, you have to go at 11, right? And most people work.
Yeah, you've got to take the day off work. Or if you're
it's
student,
not 11,
you're
it's 9:30 in the morning.
9:30. Yeah.
And then you have to wait because different things have variable amounts of council time.
So you could literally be there half the day. You don't even know the time frame of when you're going to be able
and
to
so,
leave.
So, I mean, it literally does mean that a lot of what people are hearing, a lot of what council hears are the opinions of people that don't actually work 9 to 5.
But
that's a huge stretch and a huge, it's a very bad sample that people are hearing. And that's what council hears.
And it's usually the same people every single time on
every
issue.
What, in many cases, determines council's decisions. And this isn't just in Brampton. I mean, there was a study done at MIT, if I recall correctly, where it was being researched, like who shows up at a lot of these public consultation meetings. And they tend to be older, and they tend to be less representative of the greater city. So they tend to be older, they tend to be whiter. And so at the end of the day, we're just structurally, the way we structured this, we are ignoring, you know, the diversity of this city and the youth of this city. And you know, the young families that have to, you know, go to deal with, you know, going to work and dropping their kids off to school and picking them back up.
Yeah, so I definitely think that, you know, maybe there was a little bit of a lack of foresight for the city to do something like this. Maybe no one's ever brought this issue up. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe that was the case.
I mean, how can you bring the issue up if you're at work, right?
That's true.
It's like this chicken or egg situation.
It's very true.
And then on top of it, if you actually want to access a lot of the meeting minutes or a lot of the meeting agenda, you have to go online, and then you also have to click on a PDF file that's oftentimes more than 300 pages long. And
I've seen 500.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, and even sometimes for myself, for me, who is, I'm engaged, I know where things are. Sometimes I forget how to get to the agenda, so I'm like, where are the agendas?
And
I'm having a hard time.
Yeah.
And so for a regular person, you can imagine it's difficult.
And let's, I mean, I'm a software developer, right? I'm a front-end developer, so this is a conversation I've had repeatedly. I've had this conversation at, you know, all the places I've worked. So the issue that the city faces here is, they're putting all of their minutes out and all of their, the meeting agenda inside of PDF formats. And most users are actually accessing information, you know, anywhere it is, like whether they're buying something from Amazon. A lot of them are using their phones nowadays.
It's actually worse because I have tried to open the PDFs on my laptop and it will drop pages. They're like, there'll be pages missing. The only official supported way to view it is through Internet Explorer.
Which is ridiculous. Who uses
although actually
it
PDF
PDF reader can do it too.
Yeah, but they're like, oh, you should view it through Internet Explorer.
Not
it doesn't work.
Hold
Internet
on.
Explorer.
Isn't Internet Explorer discontinued? Is that still a thing?
So fundamentally, this is not user friendly. This is not something that makes our city accessible to the citizenry.
You really have to jump
through hoops. It pushes people away, and then you wonder why nobody's involved. It's because trying to get information, to get involved, requires so many hoops to jump through that, you know, conversely, it's much easier to get that information somewhere else or just do something that's more fun to do rather than click through multiple different, you know, PDFs and then trying to find information when, I'm sorry, Nikita.
It's all right. I'll chime in later.
Trying to gather information when a lot of it is just scanned images that you can't actually, you know,
copy paste.
Yeah, you can't control F. You can't find that, right? So if you're trying to search for something, you can't find something from a raster image using PDF format.
You can sort, they mostly have it work, and there's even like column setup stuff where you, there's like page breaks so you can jump to portions, but it gets wonky if you don't view it through Internet Explorer or Adobe Acrobat.
So, yeah, but for a regular person who's like doesn't have time in general, and then like, then your agenda is 500 pages. Absolutely. No way. But I think, too, we live in a society and a time where everybody wants to share stuff on social media. And you can't share PDFs.
Yeah.
And they don't work.
Yeah. And you can't share.
They don't work on
like,
social media.
Yeah, exactly.
So it really makes it difficult for people to spread the word. Thankfully, we have people like our council-elect Paul Vicente and other people who actively post regularly. And I'll pat Brampton on the back because we do regularly sum up all of the agenda meetings and minutes every week so people can read those that are Bramptonist, but it's really not easy. They make it so difficult for you. So going back to this issue of them hosting something on a culturally significant day where arguably one third of the city is celebrating, that just is poor taste, and I think.
It's just part and parcel of a greater problem with users. And I'm Hindu. I celebrated Diwali, right? And I'm not going to get all offended about this, right? It's an honest mistake by the city, but also it's a mistake that is part and parcel of a greater attitude against, you know, the citizen as a user. And rather, you know, rather than trying to make information accessible, if the city really did care, or if, you know, city council really wants to make this a thing, I would recommend absolutely, you know, instead of using PDFs, you use HTML5 technologies. Use open technologies to convey information about meeting minutes and about meeting agenda. Then you will find that people are able to share that information much more easily on Facebook.
For sure. And the city spends a very large chunk of change to print public meeting notices in the Brampton Guardian. So maybe it's time to reevaluate that as well. Maybe there's an easier, more accessible...
They legally have to post in the Guardian.
I know that that's like part of the provincial... I guess, laws or whatever. Maybe that's something the province needs to reevaluate too, because how many people read the paper versus accessing information on the internet now? So, but maybe the city needs to look at some other ways to distribute that information that's easily accessible. I know they have it on their website, but we've already established that their website's cumbersome and not easy to use. So
feel free to ask me.
Yeah. Sashir for hire, literally.
Yeah. So on the topic, I think that council should evaluate whether maybe, so the Peel District School Board has its own calendar and they frequently reference it. Maybe they should just have staff review it, make sure it's relatively complete, see if it's missing any other important holidays, and use those as like blackout dates for when to not hold public consultation meetings.
Yeah.
And the city's not very good about getting at it. It's, some people would say it's malice, but I don't really think it is.
Not malice.
I just think that it's just lack of foresight and lack of, you know, just, I don't know. I find it, I don't think it's intentional, but I do think that it's a huge oversight for the city, given the demographics of the people that live here. It's an equity issue. And I hope that they remedy it, because we do have people, it's already challenging in general to participate. Just don't make it harder for people. Should the city review their zoning bylaws? Probably yes. The last time that they reviewed... that's a bad intro. Are the city's zoning bylaws out of date? The last time the city of Brampton made major changes to their zoning bylaws was in 2004. The last time before that was the 1980s.
Jeez, that is... So essentially...
Probably before any of us were born.
Yeah,
so I'm in my mid-20s. So yeah, I think that's probably... So for 2004, they left... So it wasn't that the time before 2004 was the last time they left that it was updated. But in 2004, there were still large chunks that hadn't been altered since the 1980s. So 2004, the 2004 version has chunks from the 80s, and who knows if those sections are from even earlier. We don't know.
So
I don't have that data.
The 2018 version, does the 2018 version have sections from the 1980s still?
Well, so what's currently going on is we're still going on the 2004 version that's just been amended when developers wanted stuff changed. And so because of how the rules work, basically everything except what is there is banned. And so everything has to get bylaw approval of it. It has to be amended. So people are like, oh, well, the city is clearly owned by developer shills. This, like, the developers clearly own council because they're approving. Also, it's actually more of a case of basically everything is banned except what's currently there. And if you want to change anything, you have to amend the rules. So a bunch of these changes actually meshes with provincial legislation. So the city's choices are you can approve it or you could fight it, and then it would go to the OMB, and then the OMB would tell you it's approved. So that's why it seems like a ton of stuff is getting approved. So
right. I think that there's two fundamental big issues with this current zoning. For one thing, it's a really big challenge for a lot of businesses to navigate around it, and it makes it hard because Brampton has always said, we need more businesses, we need more businesses, and it just isn't happening. And the second issue I see is that, you know, we keep building these single detached houses and nothing else.
Yeah, so the reason you get all of that is because you have to send out stuff to neighbors. And so if you're neighbored on three sides by open fields, well, then who's going to complain? So that's why we keep sprawling out, because it's easy to approve. The reason we don't do redevelopment is because then all the neighbors would complain.
Got it.
I really wish the city... So it's just a nippy issue. Okay, well, yeah, we know that's a big thing in Brampton. But I really wish the city would work more actively with developers on zoning stuff so that we could build some of the stuff we want to see in Brampton.
I mean, for context, I mean, right now the city's zoning for businesses is especially broken, right? So when you look at a lot of plazas, and say if you are a vet, right, you want to start a veterinary clinic, and there is one plaza, you know, near your house where there's an empty unit, and you want to get that. So if you want to, you know, have a veterinary clinic in that unit, and that plaza, you know, if that plaza is not allowed to have a veterinary clinic, because that's how it works, okay, there's a list of acceptable uses for that particular plaza. And whatever is not explicitly stated is not allowed, right? So if a veterinary clinic is not, you know, a specified use, you have to go to the city and get that changed, right? And you have to make sure the city is on board with getting that changed as well.
Yeah. And I think that was, you know, one of the new businesses that recently opened up was the virtual reality arcade. And I'm pretty sure they had to go through some significant hoops to get that approved in one of the plazas in Brampton.
Because virtual reality arcades never existed, right? And then now you have to go to the city first and tell them, hey, we want to build a virtual reality arcade. Can you let us? And then the city might be like, oh, well, what do you mean by a virtual reality arcade?
We need to have it specifically defined so we can embed it in our zoning codes if we're going to change it.
Exactly. And so that's a problem. Right? The fact that there is a whitelist, that if you want something to be allowed, it has to be included on a whitelist. And that's how it makes it especially difficult to innovate in this city, right? Because if you want to have an innovative sort of business, you first have to temper it so that the city can approve it first.
And then also jump through 50 hoops to then have the city approve it. I know that a couple of years ago, they hired an expediter, which is a person that was supposed to be working with businesses, especially to expedite, especially zoning and stuff like that, to make more businesses, you know, make it easier for businesses to come to Brampton. I don't know how effective that person has been.
I mean, not very. And another thing is just the way we are zoning these plazas, right? So a lot of these plazas are just single stories, which is, you know, not good, because if you want to set up a law office, you have to compete with a grocer, right? Yeah. You have to compete with a grocer for that space, or you have to compete with a restaurant for that space. There's no business having a law office compete with a dentist, right? Or compete with a clinic, right? For a particular space. If instead we built multi-story plazas.
So that's floor, a parking issue, actually.
Yeah. Well, no, but that's what gets to my point. There's a reason why you have to go through the city first, before you're allowed to start any sort of business in these plazas if it's not part of the acceptable use. It's because of parking. And I think Sylvia has a lot to say about
yeah.
that. Lots of opinions.
Yeah, so parking, Brampton has very high rules even for a suburban place. And so I once talked to someone who worked for the city after a meeting and I asked her, are these basically pre-metrication numbers that they just rounded up? And she just said, yeah, basically. For those of us who don't remember, metrication happened in the 70s.
So what is metrication?
Yeah,
I think we're lacking context here.
Okay. So you know how we use the metric system?
Yes.
Well, sort of-ish, kind of.
Yes.
Sometimes. Well, before that, we had the imperial system, which we got from the UK.
So metrication is just going from imperial to
yeah,
metric.
Which is fun because imperial and U.S. units aren't the same.
Yeah.
Because U.S. has different liquid measurements.
Yeah.
Which is why a 5-gallon paint jug should not be labeled 5 gallons as 4 gallons.
Okay, but like, how is this relevant to like, you know, our
okay,
parking issue?
So the rule, so they picked these rules, these numbers. And so it was per 1,000 square feet, you yeah. would have X number. And then so they switch it to one parking spot per per square meters.
Yes.
And so in the process, they wound up with a weird number. It was like, we'll just round it up a lot, just in case.
So,
because
so
what's the worst that could happen?
Needed,
yeah. So if you want to open up a restaurant, there's different categories. So for restaurants, there's a takeout primarily thing, which has different, there's one set of parking rules. And then there's your like sit down stuff. For the sit down restaurant, you need 15 park, I believe it works out to approximately 15 parking spaces per 1,000 square feet. When you count all the, so you count the parking spot and then the drive aisles and all that stuff, it works out to around 300, especially if you're going underground. So you could be looking at 4,500 square feet of parking for 1,000 square feet of restaurant. It's like 4.5-to-1 ratio. That's why they're all one stories, because there's not enough parking and how the city rules work. So you'll wind up with, so I don't know if you noticed, but if you look at a lot of the newer religious buildings, they'll be put up in like industrial areas or whatever, those kind of plazas. And that's also because of parking rules, because they need a lot of parking.
Oh, so I mean, we've identified that Brampton is way too sprawling. We keep building out and out and out instead of up, and this seems like it's an obvious problem that we've all identified.
We're actually running out of space, so we don't have a choice to deal with this,
which is crazy. And it, to me, we've built so many single family dwellings and houses. Why hasn't the city done something to fix this problem? That's my question. Because it's pretty evident to me in this 5-minute conversation we've had on this podcast that this needs to be fixed, this parking issue. So what's the city doing? Are they doing anything?
So the city is actually currently in the process of beginning the process to...
They're in the process of starting the process.
Such like a Canadian bureaucratic...
We love our rules and very obvious names like Canada Post. So there's this long process they have to go through because reasons. And so they're starting the comprehensive zoning review. There's probably another 6 or 7 words I'm missing in there. But basically, they're just looking over zoning.
Yeah.
Which,
like everything.
Our rules are weird. So because we don't get rid of anything and we just keep adding stuff, there are 44 categories for residential, 2 of which are mansion zonings. So Sproviary loves to talk about it because he got that in there. It's like, oh.
Zoning for mansions?
Yeah.
That's his crowning achievement while he was on council?
He actually liked to bring that up in the debates and a couple times. So he called it estate zoning, but we're talking about properties that have a minimum land size of 3 acres.
So we're talking like Castle Mormon. Well, that makes sense. I guess that
this is over a hectare. That's a lot of land.
Oh, that's really
and
bad.
So because there's so many different little rules and everything is zoned for one thing specifically, everything has to be amended. So even a modification of a building could land it into, you would need to not just get this permits for it, but you'd also need to amend the rules, because there's a whole bunch of different rules within these categories.
I mean, if a lot of city councilors got elected on dealing with red tape, I feel like this is the clearest example of red tape. you know, having all these zoning rules specifically to maintain minimum parking requirements.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah. And it's ridiculous. We have more parking, you know, than Houston and L.A.
Literally.
Right?
We have parking lots galore.
Those are for the requirements for restaurants. But yeah. So guess how many categories of zoning we have for townhouses, so for attached dwellings that are attached on both sides in a complex.
So what is it?
It is 10. Can you think about three distinct kinds that should have their own rules? Can you think of
a
two?
A townhouse is a townhouse.
A townhouse is a townhouse, yeah. Like, what are they zoning for? A townhouse that's like 4 units wide or a townhouse that's like 8 units wide? Is that the difference in
zoning? Well, it's actually about like minimum and maximum size and then lot depth and width and setbacks and structural stuff and parking, whether it's like in different spaces or attached or like the garages are all underneath it or they're counting like
we're
driveway
all just sighing
space.
We need to have like a special zoning episode at this point because there's a lot to unpack here.
There is a lot to unpack, but I guess how do we tackle this? It needs to be tackled.
Get rid of free parking. Honestly, that's the way I feel.
I actually don't know because I can't find the vast majority of them online.
Okay. So I think the main issue here is that, first of all, Brampton needs to reevaluate things. Like, that is the number one thing. If we still have some stray zoning bylaws left over from the 80s, that's crazy talk.
70s, sorry. 70s.
70s. Oh, that's even bad. That's even worse. It's even worse.
I feel like next council, we need to look at our zoning bylaws and say, over 100 is too much. We need to bring this down, right? We can't keep tacking on more zoning, We need to start, putting a freeze on the use of these 100 zones, and then we need to come up with brand new zones, perhaps 20 zones that can cover, most of what we need and reduce red tape, and then only apply those zones going forward.
Yeah, so part of the reason we don't have businesses goes back to zoning. So I think Patrick Brown's talking about 2 million square feet of office space. I looked, and for 2017, I believe the city report said 4 million, which
that's
sounds like a
vacant?
Lot for square feet. No, that's total amount of space available in the city. So Mississauga's got like 10 times that much. So the reason you don't have office space is because we haven't zoned for it. And where we have zoned for it, it's an industrial area. But guess what? Nice companies don't want to set up in some gritty industrial area next to a food processor.
They want to set up right beside that.
Well, that's the other thing too. Exactly. Like, we're in a time where employers are looking for they want their employees to be healthy, want to have a really good work-life balance. So they're looking to be easily accessible by transit. They're looking to be in a metropolitan urban places that have other entertainment, life, restaurants, things to eat, places to go. So nobody wants to go on like Steeles Avenue, in the middle of a bunch of factories. That's the reality. Any reputable business or Fortune 500 company or, the caliber that we want and say we want in Brampton, we're not making it easy for them to come here.
So if you want to talk about like Steeles, so I live in Peel Village. So there's a section of road called Kennedy Road South in the plans. One of the, 52 different areas the city's broken up into. I'll have to double check that, but yeah, there's really like 50 different sections the city's broken up into because there's the 44 residential things, and there's like, 10 commercial, and then there's different industrial zoning things, and then these each fit into different categories, which have their own rules on top of that.
Rules on top of rules.
So if you ever heard the phrase turtles all the way down, here it's rules all the way down. And the reason we have those rules is because they adopted it from some other city, which adopted it because they wanted to exclude laundries because they didn't want Chinese people.
Like, it's
holy hell.
Well, that's how old our stuff is. Like, I'm not surprised to hear that if you're looking at zoning from the 1970s.
Which is from the 60s, from the 50s, which goes back to like pre-World War II US, when they had just banned explicitly saying in the city code, black people can't live here. So they put these rules in to make it so expensive black people couldn't afford to live here.
So what you're saying is zoning exists to exclude black people, and that's the beginning of all of it.
At this point, it's not deliberate, but we've been borrowing it from other people who borrowed it from other people,
and that's what the root of it was. Excluding the root of it was anti-black racism.
So it has an always been about this. So in the Middle Ages, so tanneries, so like your leather products, Canada loves leather. They're smelly and they're nasty and they dump a bunch of stuff. So they had zoning, and so it was on the outside of cities and dumped it out.
Right. So Kennedy rode south.
Yeah. So the issue here is the city has these beautiful ideas about we want it walkable and we want it urban and we don't want all the parking out front and there's going to be trees and it's not going to be that far from the property line. And there's one big issue. There's no parking exceptions, so they have to deal with obscene amounts of parking, and it specifies it has to be below, most of it has to be below grade. So you have to have a gigantic parking garage underground that's like 10 stories deep,
so
which makes it infeasible to build like anything. So it just deteriorates.
Right. And I guess for me, my question is, can it be fixed at this point? Kennedy Road South seems like it's a lot of like auto shops and that kind of stuff. Is it fixable at this point? Can we do anything to remedy that situation?
Well, you could unban other stuff.
Okay, so it is definitely the zoning. Okay, I mean, I think the city has a lot to unpack and a lot to think about. What's promising about it all is that through the 2040 vision, they did really take a look at some of the stuff that they've been doing wrong. And then I think it really helped the city evaluate as well. Like, hey, wait a second, we do want a more walkable city. We want it to be more urban. We want more transit. And maybe we should fix some of our bylaws, our zoning bylaws, to let that happen.
You can't fix it. You have to burn it down and start over. It's not fixable.
I'm in favor of the burning.
Burn it down. I will bring the firewood.
Yeah.
Like, Sushil, you bring the matches.
Yeah, 100 zones, way too much. Let's burn that shit down. Bleep that out.
Let's we burn don't bleep out anything
yeah.
here.
yeah, let's burn that down because we need to start all over again. We need efficient rules for, you know, the modern world.
So like with the parking rules, think about it. People are younger people our age are driving less, but our rules are still designed around this view of, well, every family is going to have two cars and drive absolutely everywhere. But then we also
ain't
potential,
nobody got money for that.
Yeah. It's like you look at car insurance here, no one's got money for that. But then we also have the potential of autonomous cars. And now we have an actual transit system that's the fastest growing in Canada and is actually really good for a suburban city. So do we need these rules? So you get into it. And so for a bachelor unit or a one bedroom, you need 1.5 parking spots. So for underground parking, you need at least 50. So you're going 50 to 100 grand a parking spot. So the thing going up across the GO station is going to be at least 75 grand a parking spot. So you're looking at least $100,000 for a unit that costs $100,000 to build. And then there's the 30 plus grand in fees on it. And then they have to have a loan at 10 to 15% interest to float these costs. And then you have, so it's all of this stuff. So if you, it looks like housing is outrageous to buy. It's not just developers making massive amounts of money. There's a whole bunch of stupid shit that goes into it. If the city wanted to, they could effectively lower the cost of one bedrooms in this city, new ones, by like 50 grand, and the city wouldn't lose any money in the process.
So here's the thing. I mean, this really shows that we've got some serious issues with these zoning bylaws, because we know that housing is not affordable in Brampton. It's very difficult for people to find. And that's another example of how fixing these bylaws could really help Brampton and residents here. So we'll have to see where the city takes this. It's going to be really interesting to watch from the sidelines, and we will see if something comes out of these zoning consultations that they're doing. And that is all for today. Thanks for listening in to the Brampton Talks podcast. For more details about any of the stories or topics we discussed this week, check out BramptonIst.com.